This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Story Studio. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast for an independent publishing company that explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. My name is Luke Condor-McKay, and I'm joined by Mr. Daniel Wilcox. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, Daniel.
And we've got, you'll have to hang on just because I've got like a pretty big introduction for you here. So we're going to be talking to someone who I've watched from afar, and I've just seen he's taken giant step after giant step towards building like an incredibly amazing career in creative writing, and that's in games, films, and novel writing as well. He's the best-selling author of the epic fantasy series Fours of Redemption, the urban fantasy werewolf series Cursed Night, the tough guy urban fantasy series Modern Necromancy, and he's the co-author of the vampire post-apocalyptic series Reclaiming Honor. That's he's co-writes that with our previous guest, Michael Underlay. He also writes video games, such as Game of Thrones and Walking Dead, and has sold and optioned various screenplays, and he also co-hosts one of my favourite writing podcasts, Creative Writing Career. You really need to check that out. And he's a really cool guy. So welcome to the show, Mr. Justin Sloan. How's it going, Justin?
Welcome, Justin.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm glad you say that about the podcast. I hope people aren't mad at me. We've been kind of slacking lately as far as getting episodes out with the bunch of life changes.
So. Yeah. I think once you get so many out, you're allowed a few. You're allowed like a couple of weeks here and there. Yeah.
That makes sense. Unless you have like 70 or so, then you're safe, right?
Yeah. Plus, yeah. I don't think people realize how much work it is to put out like a weekly podcast. It's killer. It's so killer.
Yeah. Especially when you have like maybe 10 hours to write a week and then you have to take up a couple of those to do podcasts. It's just, it hurts.
Yeah. So what's everyone been working on? What have you been working on, Justin?
Working on too many options. Yeah. Well, right now we just launched a fantasy book, the new one with Anderlei. So with Michael Anderlei, we have the four books in the Reclaiming Honor series that are like vampire post-apoc.
Yeah.
And now we have my first book in the Age of Magic series, which is part of his Kryptherian Gambit world still. And it's basically fantasy. It's magic paladins thinking that magic is evil and declaring war on all magic users. And then the main paladin's sister starts using magic. So he's like, crap. Yeah. And he has to leave the paladins and he's kind of hunted down and stuff like that. So
is that with is that in the, I can't remember the guy's name. I'm blanking, but the guys who do the part-time writers podcast.
So Chris, CM Raymond and Lee Barbant.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. So they did the first three and they're about to release their fourth. And then P.T. Hilton has one about to come out in the same world. And then Brandon Barr and some other people, Candy Crumb, some awesome authors are going to be releasing in there. So it's going to be pretty cool. And they're all connected. It's like P.T. and mine. He has some people that'll show up in mine and vice versa. And then they're going to join forces in like some book, like book three or so. So it's going to be pretty cool.
I love stuff like that.
Yeah,
I think it's really cool. I've been talking about wanting to do that with him forever, but we just couldn't figure out like a reason, you know, that had enough money behind it, because we're both like, yeah, but that'll take away from our other stuff. Yeah. But now it's like, we know it's going to do at least well enough. So, yeah. But then the big thing that I'm working on is I'm trying to do something similar where I am kind of more of the dungeon master, if you were.
The Kevin Feige.
Showrunner. Yeah. I have a couple of people that I'm working with who are doing most of the writing and I'm doing some of the writing.
Yeah.
And, man, that's a lot of fun. That's a sci-fi, space marine, time travel.
I think
series.
I've seen some of the covers for those, and I think they're pretty awesome. If they're the ones I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
it looks really cool.
We've gone through like five different versions of covers, lots of different artists, because we keep getting one, and we're like, yeah, it's pretty cool. And then he does the second, and we're like, yeah, well, not that cool. Because, you know, you see it at first and you're just thinking it's awesome. But like you have a little bit of time behind it, or you start showing it to people, or you start thinking about what's actually in the market and what's going to be up against, or you just start realizing that it's a lot more cartoony than you originally thought. And what? Yeah.
Well, I mean, all the ones I've seen have been pretty spot on. So I'm sure whatever you end up with, it'll look cool.
Yeah. And it might just be us being really picky of our own stuff, right? You never know. Yeah. But like some of them we're going to just use for short stories, and like we're going to do one free on InstaFreebie, and we're going to do one on Amazon for 99 cents and using those covers. So they're still nice covers that we paid like $200 for. But
you paid $200 for those covers each?
Yeah, 150 plus 50 for the font. Yeah, typography.
Wow. So that's because me and Dan were saying those covers, like all of your covers are great, to be honest. Like where are you finding these artists?
Yeah. I know some people who pay lots of money for cover artists. I just can't afford it, so I don't. So I spend a lot more time than some people would say I should, like going through DeviantArt and looking at different artists on there and contacting them and trying them out, or other places too, like 99 Designs. You know, you can go right on there and you can check out what they've done before. And instead of doing a contest, just hire them directly through 99 Designs. Yeah. So it's like $330 in that case. But you already know what you're getting, so...
What's your success rate with DeviantArt? Because I know there's a lot of people, I've contacted quite a few people who have been, they've got good stuff up, but then it's like last active in 2013.
Yeah. Well, for sure, it's like you're going to contact 20 people and get like two or three responses. So that's the downside. Like a lot of people I know are like, oh, I just found an artist, I contacted him, I'm waiting anxiously. And I'm like, well, then you're an idiot. It's like applying for BookBub. No, wow, I applied for BookBub. Good job. Do it once a week for 2 years and then tell me you applied for BookBub for 2 years. Yeah. Like, I don't care if you applied once. It's not going to happen, probably. Same thing with DeviantArt. Your chances of getting responses are pretty low sometimes. But I found that, you know, maybe more like half reply, but then out of the half, like they each want $1,500. And that's awesome, and they're totally worth it. But it's like, I just can't afford that. If I'm going to do 6 books in a series and launch them all at once, that means I need 6 times 1,500 right now. Come on.
and then in the series, you don't know whether it's going to pay for it. I mean, I'm sure it would eventually.
Yeah. Well, that's the nice thing about writing with Michael Anderle is like, we know those books are going to pay for themselves. So you can right off the bat pay for an awesome artist, because you're like, well, I could pay this artist $500 or $1,000, whatever, because I know I'm going to make that back in the first month easily. And that's awesome. And, you know, versus writing your own books and you just never know. That's tough.
Yeah, of course. What about you, Dan? What have you been working on?
Just cracking away on edits for They Remain. Coming up to the end of that now, so I'm getting there. It's starting to take shape. I'm getting to the point later on in the book of the editing part where you're just like, I'm ready for it to be done. But I'm also enjoying the process as it is now. But yeah, I think it's taking good shape, and I'm aiming to have that done by next week and hand it into your lap so we can hopefully just get that out in the next couple of weeks or so. Well, yeah, maybe a month. We'll see.
How many words is that? I mean, if you mind me asking.
This one's 75,000. At the minute. Okay. I think it might stretch to about 80, but we'll see.
Nice. That's good. I like that. And then when you guys say like you're doing edits, so do you do a lot of rounds of revisions?
I don't think we try not to, but we sometimes do.
Yes, we had one book which it was pretty much you wrote, I edited, you edited, I proofread, and it was out. And then another one where we're kind of at the minute back and forth, but I think should be in a good state, but it'll be about draft 5, won't it?
Yeah, which we don't want to do because it takes too long. I mean, we would like to get to the point where we're kind of doing what
streamlining
you're
it, yeah.
Doing sort of your thing, Justin, but I don't know, it seems so hard. Maybe we're just maybe we've just been too critical. I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's tough on both sides. Like, you could be too critical, but it could also just be that it depends where you're on the writing, right? Like, definitely my first book took me 6 years, so there's it's different compared to now where I write one in a month and have all this different processes going in that make it work a little bit better. But even then, like, I wouldn't mind going back and spending some time. Like what I like to do, if I had like unlimited time and still people just kept sending me paychecks, what I would do is probably, if just like, what do they call that? Like in Name of the Wind, they have a thing, or it's also that website where people can give you money.
Steam It. Are you talking about?
Oh, not that, but it, there's another one. Like where they're your, I'm forgetting anyway. I'll come back to it later. It'll just pop in my head.
Patreon.
Where if I'm there, my Patreon or vice versa, whatever it is, you know, it'd be great if you could just like look back through your book, read through it, revise some sentences here and there. Like that's the process I like. And then you like realize, oh, some more emotion could have gone back 3 chapters ago. You go back, add in some emotional scenes. Like that's awesome. But nowadays it doesn't work so well.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No. So I guess I've actually signed off on a book today, which is always quite nice to do. We got a dog, which is just taken out all my writing time. Well, not all of it, but just because there's so much work. There's so much work. And I kind of feel like if someone asked me if they should get a dog as a writer, I'd say get a cat, because cats are so much easier. Just do their own thing. And you just,
they need less attention too, probably, right?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
I babysat a dog for my nan about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago, just to test whether or not we were ready to have a dog. And by the end of that 7 days, we weren't ready to have a dog.
Yeah. How old was the dog?
Oh, about two or three.
Yeah, so still pretty active. But peeing and pooing outside though, yeah?
No.
Oh, right. Okay.
Strange environment. Enjoy it.
Cool. So I guess we've got to do the big whoops. Has anyone got anything cool that they've been reading, watching, seeing, doing, sniffing? Justin?
I haven't started yet, but I just saw the trailer today for the next Shadow of Mordor, Shadow of Wars, I think it's called.
Yes.
Middle-earth, Shadow of the next Lord of the Rings kind of game. Oh, my God. I'm super stoked on that. Like, I'm not a big gamer, to be honest, but I like some games. And, like, the Tomb Raider games that they recently did, the two reboots by Crystal Dynamics, and then Shadow of Mordor. Like, these are amazing games. Like, you're watching a movie, you're playing the game, it's all part of one experience. There's no, like, oh, now I got a hack and slash for 2 hours and it's boring as hell. You know, there's none of that. It's just, it's awesomeness all the way. And now this new game looks like quadruple that. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of those sort of incredibly immersive filmic games. Like, I think they've been doing it ever since that Metal Gear Solid 2 came out, which was like 3 or 4 hours of cutscenes. I was like, I'm enjoying this more than actually playing the game.
Yeah, and it's great, like with Tomb Raider, where it doesn't feel like the cutscenes really separate from the gameplay. It just feels like, oh, this is just more of the game. Cool, you know?
Yeah.
It's very similar with The Last of Us as well. That's very theatrical.
Yeah,
love that story.
Yeah, they're a good one.
Yeah.
What about you, Dan? You got a big whip?
My big whip is that I finally got around to doing something that I've been meaning to do for a while, which is read some of Chris Fox's nonfiction books for authors. Simply because I sit outside of my child's bedroom door for half an hour so that he doesn't run out of his bedroom and fall down the stairs every night. And I finished the end of a book and realized that because I was on Kindle Unlimited, I could just jump on and download one of Chris's. So I checked out Six Figure Author and Lifelong Writing Habits, and they're quite short reads, but they're definitely to the point and it's not really bloated. It's just the information that
did you do the exercises? Like, did you...
In my head.
I enjoyed it as well. I think I've done Six Figure Author or Launch the Market I've read through, which is really great.
Because he's about to launch a new one, isn't he? Which is Relaunch Your Novel.
Yeah.
It's about reviving your old works. It might have gone a bit stale.
It came out, didn't it? Or is it up for pre-order? One of the two, I thought.
Yeah. I think, is it pre-order? I'm not sure. I saw one of his posts about it.
Yeah.
Obviously, didn't think in.
But
it's a really easy read. I thought it was had a lot of interesting stuff in there for, especially Six Figure Author, for people that are maybe looking at the best platforms to put their books on. Because I kind of like how he's just unapologetically, I'm going to throw all my eggs into the Kindle basket.
I think it kind of makes sense to go, especially for us who sort of haven't got a massive sort of fan base or much of one at all, to go with like somewhere there's already a fan base built in. Justin, are you wide on any of your books? Are you all in on Kindle?
I'm wide on some. So let's see. On my teddy bear books.
Oh, yeah.
I figured those are so small and they don't, like, nobody really cares about KU on those anyway. So I went wide with those. I haven't really done a lot of promotion on it, though. It's just here and there, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I have a couple of books that were picked up international markets, and those are, I guess you could call wide at that point, because they're not just going to publish on Amazon.
Yeah.
They're going to do in their bookstores and maybe Barnes & Noble too and all that. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
So in that sense.
Yeah. Cool. So, so we've got some questions for you, Justin, if that's okay. We've got quite a few. Feel free to answer or tell us to do one. The last time we talked was like 2 years ago, believe it or not. And at the time you were working for Telltale. I think you had the Fourth Redemption series you were working on and the Ali Strom books. I mean, that was 2 years ago. So I was just kind of wondering personally, like, what are the biggest changes for you in the last 2 years in your writing life?
Yeah, that seems like forever ago, huh? Well, that process that we were talking about, like where you know, if people have heard me talk on other shows, they're probably used to this, but basically now I've gotten much more to the point where I delegate and rely on others. Yeah. So instead of just trying to write the whole book and then spend some time away from it and then come back and revise it, spend some time. Now I write a first draft as quick as I can. When I'm about either a third or half of the way through, I send it either to one of my favorite beta readers or my editor, one of the two, whichever I feel like, because I haven't really figured out which one works better yet. And then, especially if I feel like it's more raw, maybe I'll send it to the editor first so I don't offend my beta reader by giving her a piece of crap.
Yeah.
and then I just keep moving, you know, so that by the time she gets my edits back to me, I have the rest of the book done, or at least another chunk done that I can send. And I just keep going like that. And that's helped out a lot. And then whenever that one's done, I send it to the other person, either the beta reader or the editor. And then when I'm done, I have an editor that looks over it once before I send it to a group of beta readers, or you could call them just-in-time readers, which is a big thing Michael Anderle has done, where it's like last minute, check for any final things that we just might have missed, you know, like typos or loopholes or whatever.
Plot holes. I thought it was a pun on your name.
Yeah. So too.
Just-in-time.
Yeah.
Readers. Yeah. So that's kind of the new process that I love now. Like I said, I wouldn't mind having more time to sit back and relax. And I think when I take a little bit more time to myself, I might try to do one of those on the side where I still do one of these a month, but then also try to write something that takes me like a year that I just spend time with, like perfecting every single angle of it, like every sentence. I know it's insane. Like that in self-publishing, you don't think about doing something like that, but, I have a connection kind of through Brandon Sanderson's agent, who's one of my favorite writers. So being with his agent would be amazing. And he did look at some of my stuff at one point. And he's like, I see why you're being successful in the self-published world, but an editor from one of the top six is probably not going to take this, which is, you know, makes sense because they're looking for totally different things than the majority of readers of commercial fiction are looking for. But I do want to get to that point where I can go with the big six at some point also and have both streams of income so that if 1 month Amazon gives you a lower payment and you were counting on that payment, you still have the traditional houses giving you their royalty checks. And, you know, the idea is to have like 20 times more income a month than you actually need. That'd be awesome. But,
yeah, it'd be quite nice. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I think the main thing that changed is probably process.
So how many books have you put out in the last 2 years? Is that, it might be a bit of a random question for you, but...
I don't know. Yeah, according to... Kindle, or what was it? Something report, book report, or book tracker, one of the two, whatever it is, book report, right? According to them, I have like 50 books out right now. So when we last talked, right, I had like, yeah, but that includes like the short, like middle grade books, you know, that are like 100 pages each.
Okay.
So that's not much. That's like 30,000 words. It includes those. So 50 books, including those. And when we last talked, I guess I hadn't published anything, or I had just published Falls of Redemption and Alice Drum. I don't remember.
I can't remember. I think maybe done the Falls of Redemption stuff, or you were republishing them in a different way or something like that. I can't really remember.
Yeah, that might have been. Because originally I did those as episodes, and then I was like, wait, this isn't right. This doesn't fit. It's not it should be epic fantasy trilogy as it is meant to be. Yeah. And as I started off. So somewhere around that range, 30 or 40 books.
What would you say the biggest successes?
Of course, the Michael Anderle stuff. But, you know, if I ignore that, because that's just a given, like, he touches something, it turns to gold. He's that goose in the DuckTales movie.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? So if you ignore that, Falls of Redemption has definitely made me the most money, but it hasn't made like big money. That I rebranded it like we talked about. I put new covers on it. At first I'd done some Fiverr covers, you know, like the $5, maybe $15 things.
Yeah.
And I had a Filipino artist do some stuff at one point that I liked, but I didn't love. And so I totally redid all that and paid. I did a 99 design contest. I didn't think I liked any of them. I later, like 6 months later, saw somebody's book cover that I liked and said, hey, your book cover's awesome. Who did it? He sent it to me. I looked through his art and saw a cover that looked kind of like what I was going for and realized it was one he submitted to my contest that I rejected, apparently. So went back and hired him to finish that one. And then ended up going with some other artists just through, like, you know, like I was saying, going through their lists to do each of the individual books. So I had the individual books and the trilogy out. And then through like offering first book free here and there, like 1 or 2 days a month, and doing promos on it through like Book Barbarian and whatnot, that book started paying off to like, you know, the $1,000 to $2,000 a month range. Wow. Series of books, those three, which is nice. You know, that's like you start to feel like a real author at that point. You know, when you're it's like making $1 or $2 or $100 or $2 a month, it's kind of like, that's cool. It's money, but it's not like real money. And then you get
it's a side hustle at that point. And then it's the next level, isn't it? Yeah. What would you say the biggest waste of time?
What's that?
What would you say the biggest waste of time? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to call it a waste of time. It's really not, I guess. That's tough. I was going to say, like, the children's books, because they're not as marketable. But, like, one of our series sold to French-speaking countries, and we made more money off of that than I made on all my books in the 2 years before I signed up with Anderle.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to – it's tough, right? And then I did a lot of time on screenwriting, and it seems like that for so long that doesn't pay off. But then all of a sudden we sell a script, and they're trying to get it into production by the end of this year. And it seems like it could actually happen. And wow. These little things, like, yeah. Where it all seems like waste of time until it's not a waste of time. So tough
everything's
question.
Worth it. Everything's everlasting.
Yeah. Like, I took a month off from my Michael Anderle books to focus on my book two of my werewolf vampire series. Hounds of God is the first one. And I wrote the second one and came out after I had two books with Michael Anderle that are also vampire werewolves. So I thought, well, this is a given, you know, it's going to do well. And, like, nobody bought the book. So that feels like a waste of time. But maybe when book three comes out, everybody will buy the books, and it won't have been. So who knows?
Yeah.
It seems that you've got, you say you've got about 50 books out, and they all seem to vary across different genres. Are you one of these people that you just write the things that you enjoy, or is there kind of a strategy behind the stuff that you are writing?
Yeah, it's changed more recently, of course. You know, it's the same idea with, like, where I always wanted to be not just a writer, but I wanted to write it, be a screenwriter, video game writer, and novelist. Same thing with books. Like, I don't want to just be a fantasy guy, because if I feel like writing something that, like you said, yeah, I'm one of those guys who writes whatever I feel like. Yes. but I've been trying to change that slightly. And what I'll do nowadays is I'll maybe even get a cover for what I want to write and, like, put the outline down and then just put it in a shelf for someday when I know I'm going to be able to get to it. Because then I feel like I kind of accomplished something. I have the outline. I have the cover. It's going to happen, but I will ignore it and focus on more commercial properties in the meantime. And then when I feel like I'm at that point where I'm making, like, 20 times more a month than I need, I could bust out those books and do one for myself and then go back and make some more money and then do one for myself. You know, like yeah. Entourage, one for them, one for me.
Yeah, I was going to say that about the one for me, one for them model. How many of those outlines have you got stored away, ready to go?
I mean, probably only like 3 or 4. So it's not like insane. But I mean, I have a lot of other story ideas that I've locked away that I probably won't ever touch. Like, at the time, they seemed really cool. I'll tell you guys one, because I'm never going to use it. I thought it'd be really cool to do, like, a Breaking Bad style thing of the Joker without calling him the Joker. But it's based on this old story by Victor Hugo, I think it is, whoever did The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Hmm. And it's the man who smiled too much, or the man who laughed too much, or something like that. And it's this kid who, like, they deform his face, kind of like a Slumdog Millionaire. And he comes across this girl, and there's the mom's blind or the girl's blind or something like this. And there's this whole, like, tragic story around it. So I was going to make this love story where the girl gets taken and enslaved and he has to rescue her. But in the process, you know, suffers a lot and goes through all this depression and basically starts losing his mind. But at the end, he just goes on this crazy rampage and, like, kills them all. So it's like Deadpool. Deadpool, is that the one thing? You know, one of those kind of things.
Yeah, you can do that. You can do that as a comic book. You don't have to use Joker. Yeah. I know you could use, like, it's quite a common practice nowadays to do a sort of like reskin the character, make your own version of him so people know who it is. Yeah. But it's
exactly
not
that's
really,
what I was gonna do. And I was never gonna call him the Joker, but at the end he'd be wearing, like, a purple suit and kind of just laughing about to go kill them all. And but then, that, you know, for the market, that doesn't do anything for me. That's gonna be the opposite of what I want. Like, people who are reading my current books, they want happy endings, they want fist pumping awesomeness the whole way through. They don't want to be depressed. And so if I release something like that, I'm probably gonna lose half my audience and they'll never come back to me.
Yeah.
So those ones I just keep in the shelf.
So you published all these books. You published maybe 30 books or something in the last, like, 2 years. I was going to ask, do you think if you spent all that time working on one book, would you have learned more about, like, writing and becoming a better writer on that one book? Or do you think in the process of finishing and starting a new book and finishing and starting a new book, do you think that help you learn quicker.
Yeah. I think it's pretty dumb of people to just focus on the same thing for years. Yeah. I had a buddy who was doing screenplays. And so in the time that I wrote, like, 20 screenplays, he just kept revising that same one over and over. And, you know, it's like he'll go get notes and he'll revise it. But it's like a lot of that's subjective, you know. You're revising based off somebody else's opinion, and then you're revising off of somebody else's opinion. But that doesn't mean it's right. So you might not even be revising in the right direction. And this kind of comes into my writing style, where I feel like at some points in my writing career, I've kind of veered away from who I am. And I look back at Land of Gods in that series, especially the third book in that series, and I'm like, that was me. Who is this guy now? And I'll have to, like, try to go back and find myself again, you know?
Yeah.
But in that first book I ever did, I did, you know, revise. Like I said, it took me 6 years, not just nonstop. I went off and I'd go like write the Ally Strom books, and then I'd come back to the Falls of Redemption and revise it some more. And that was a kind of a cool process because I started that in maybe it's more like 5 years. I started in 2010 or 11, somewhere in there, and then didn't publish until late 2014, 15, 16, somewhere in there. I forget. Might have been 2016.
Which book was that? Sorry, which was the one you spent?
Land of Gods.
Okay.
And
right, yeah,
the
yeah.
sequel to it. It was originally like one book that I then broke out into two and then added the third onto.
Yeah.
Which is why it's not as good of a book as it could be, because if I was going to reapproach that now, you know, I would totally write book one as a book yes. instead of a book that's broken into. Yes. I don't know if I answered your question there.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. I think, Dan, you sent me a video about a month or two ago about the seven habits of the highly effective artists.
Yeah.
And he was saying that like 80% of the learning is done of like the learning of and improving is done in the finishing and moving on to the next project.
Yeah.
So it kind of feeds it. It kind of feeds into that guy as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you can learn so much more in the next 6 months or 2 years of working on other projects and then go back and revise that one versus it'd be a much harder learning process to, and you would have wasted so much time. You know, you'd feel like if you just waited that year or whatever and then went back and revised, you could have learned so much more that might have taken you like 5 years otherwise, because you're not exploring and expanding your mind into new projects and new ideas and coming up with new thoughts or even story ideas. You know, if I go write my children's book about a girl with a magic amulet that came from the Ring of Solomon, you know, that's going to make me think about a whole set of different things and read a different set of books, you know, to think about that. So that when I come back to my other series, I have all these other ideas flowing around in my head. And a lot of times when you focus on something else too, you start thinking about the other projects, you know, or if I go watch like Indiana Jones.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'll start thinking about my own books, even if it has nothing to do with that movie, just because your mind starts coming up with stuff. And you're like, oh, what if you did that there? And oh, that totally doesn't fit this at all. But in my book, that'd be perfect. You know, this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How do you juggle that? Because it sounds like there's 1,000 ideas floating around in your head. And outside of, you know, having to outline every single idea that come in and having to get a cover for every single book, do you have like a notepad that you just literally just jot ideas down and then pick which ones you're going to elaborate a bit more on, or what's your kind of process for that?
Yeah, Evernote. Basically, I just put everything in Evernote. I used to anyway. I don't know if I haven't used Evernote in quite a while now. So I think nowadays it's kind of gotten to the point where, yeah, I have my main things that I, like my main ideas that are just kind of too strong in my head to ever go away. Like what I did the other day is I wrote a short of one of them. So, and I published it. So that's my one. It's called, I think it's called His Dark Knights or The Dark Knights. I forget, but it's basically King Arthur vampires, you know, cause I thought that'd be kind of fun. I was like, I want to write a book that's King Arthur, but is a vampire. And Merlin, was a sorcerer or a paladin who became a sorcerer when he got corrupt. So that's kind of like this interesting idea. Right. So instead of spending time writing the book, because I was in the middle of other stuff that's going to make more money for sure, I wrote the short story version of it and published that. And that way, if anybody else comes and writes it later, they can't be like, oh, you stole my idea. I'd be like, dude, that short story was there 10 years ago, sucka.
Easy. With, see, you cross a lot across sorry, you cross through loads of different genres. How does that affect your writing style? Because obviously I've read Justice's Calling, which is your post-apocalyptic vampire thriller, and it's very fast paced and it's very go, go, go. But then when you switch into your sort of fantasy stories, they're commonly a lot more wordier, a lot sort of, they linger around a lot on the details and they're a bit lengthier. How do you find just hopping from one to the other?
Oh, I just do it wrong. Yeah. I like to basically tell people too that I don't really like the fantasy books that take too long. Like, I love Brandon Sanderson. He's like my epitome of what fantasy is, but I know some people really don't like what he did with the Robert Jordan books. Mm. Are you guys still there? Just making sure, because yeah. It's kind of froze up.
Yeah, yeah. No, coming through fine to us. Yeah, yeah. Can you hear us? Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Justin? Oh, I think he's frozen. Can you hear me, Dan?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. Let's try... It's dropped off. Okay.
How bizarre.
Mm-mm-mm. Yeah, sorry. She's in now. I was kept seeing, looking over at the thingy. Hey, you back?
Yes.
Hey, cool.
So, lost you guys. Did you guys catch any of what I said, or should I just start over on that?
So you're talking about like differences in prose styles, right? Between...
Yeah, you were saying about when I switched between the question was about switching and genre stuff. So should I stop back in there?
Do it. Yeah, start that one again. I think if that's all right with you.
Okay, are you recording already?
Yeah, so we're good to go. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So basically, I kind of switch genres all the time without switching styles. Unfortunately, maybe to my detriment, right? So a lot of times I'll write, the kids' books will feel quite similar to my adult books, minus any kind of possible swearing or sexual references. Mm. But as far as like the tone and the pacing and the voice, even maybe to a degree, they're pretty similar. But for fantasy too, I like, you know, Brandon Sanderson's style that's a little more fast paced and less description heavy versus like Robert Jordan, who's all about like the world building and taking like 5 years of chapters before from going from one, like he'll just go from the house to the store and it takes like 5 chapters. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. Why is this taking so long? Yeah. And people love that. Some people are going to hate me for saying that, but I'm much more of like the fast paced, kick butt style of story writing. And even like you'll read some people, some of these self-published authors, and this is why I'm starting to love this, because they're not bogged down by the big six telling them what they need to do. You know, like these editors who think they know what the readers want, but there's all these readers out here like me who don't want that crap. So you'll get some awesome authors like P.T. Hilton and Will White who are writing fantasy, but it's keeping me engaged, and it's not full of all this flowery prose that's boring me or just dropping all this world building information on me. You know, like they give it to you in little bits throughout the story. And so that's what I do with my own writing. I basically just write what I want to read. Even if I know some fantasy readers will read that and be like, well, it's only like 80,000 words and it's not full of all this world building, so I don't like it. Well, go read Robert Jordan then. I don't care. I think it'd be better if I got a little bit more of that. And I say that, but when I brought up this point to Chris and Lee with the Age of Magic stuff, they both called me out and said, what are you talking about, dude? They're totally different. Like not trying to pat me on the back, but telling me I'm wrong. They're like, no, you're wrong. So I might be seeing it through like some kind of weird lens on myself, you know, like the mirror doesn't match what's really there. Mm. But in my mind, the pacing and all that stays pretty similar.
Mm. Yeah. In terms of like you're doing all this writing and production, how much time are you spending writing and how much time are you spending marketing?
So what I've tried to do nowadays is write in the morning and market at night. You know, because I'm too tired at night anyway, usually. So sometimes if I'm feeling up for it, I'll try to write a little bit. Like the day before, I think I went out there and tried to write for about 45 minutes. And then when I started nodding off, what I'll do is I'll put a movie on and do marketing while I'm watching the movie, because movies will keep me awake. If I put on, even if it's a movie I've seen before, like I'll put on Pirates of the Caribbean and I know that's fun. I know what's happening and there's music that's pumping me up and the dialogue's funny, but I'm kind of used to it. So it could be almost white noise.
The music is so good in that as well.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite soundtracks for writing for sure.
Yeah.
So then that helps me to get through like 2 hours of marketing, even when I would be nodding off otherwise. And then, writing in the morning. I try to get some writing in on the weekends. Like my wife, I'll usually watch the kids for the first 3 hours while she sleeps in. And then she'll wake up and give me like 2 hours to write. So that works out really well.
What defines success for you? Because you've got your sort of fast-paced genre fiction stuff you're doing with Michael Andale. You say earlier that you'd like more time to do sort of the lengthier projects. You've gone into, obviously, your game stuff, your screenwriting. What is it that you see as the end goal in the long run? Or do you not really have one of those? Is it just sort of just take it as it comes and see what happens?
Oh, I've already accomplished them all.
You are complete.
I'm complete. I really feel that way in some levels, because when I started writing in a large part because I love the Game of Thrones books. Mm. And then I got to work on Game of Thrones at Telltale. And so this was like this big full circle where I'm like, well, all right, job done. I did it. But there's some other properties out there like that I would love to work on. You know, there's big things. Like I would definitely love to go do a screenplay or two at Disney or Pixar or something like that. That'd be awesome.
I remember you saying Pixar was a big one for you. Are you still feeling that, or have you moved
still
on?
Still, I was on an 8-year goal. I set an 8-year goal around that same time we talked last time. So I got 6 years left on it. So we'll see. Cool.
We'll do a podcast every 2 years and we'll update each other on
check up. Yeah, Pixar.
Exactly. We'll see what happens. Yeah. But yeah, so there's some things that have been happening that I can't talk about that are like more similar to that, which are pretty exciting. So we'll see what happens if that does happen. People probably heard my podcast where I went full time like 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or it was about a month and a half ago. Yeah. So I went full time, and then like 2 weeks after that, or a week after that, a video game company recruited me, and it was too cool of an opportunity. So I said yes. So I'm back in the office. Yeah. So I went full time. I achieved that goal, and then I said, okay, I'm done.
How long were you a full time offer before the game contract came in?
Like a week. And they wanted to hire me right away too. I said, "Oh, wait, give me a month." And they said, "No, we got a week. Will you do it?" And I said, "All right." Yeah. I was hoping to get like 2 or 3 books done in that time. I was just going to go like hardcore and try to bust out like 2 or 3 and have them ready to go. But the job is exciting, and it's working with some people that I love and working on properties that I love. So it's pretty cool. I don't think of it like a job. I think of it as I'm a full-time writer, and this is another writing thing that I do during the day.
Yeah, of course.
But so going back to your question though, the full-time thing where I'm pulling in huge amounts of cash and just being able to write whenever I feel like it, that's still definitely something I'll probably do for the majority of my life from now on, I would think. Yeah. And that's like the goal.
Do you enjoy writing? Do you prefer video game writing or one over the other?
When I was at Telltale, somebody asked me this question. He said, "What are you? Are you a screenwriter, a video game writer, or a novelist?" You know, because same thing with like genre. What genre do you write? People love to ask those kind of questions because they don't understand that anybody can be more than one thing. But anyway, the answer that popped into my head immediately, you know, like those psychology tests, first thing that comes to your head.
Yeah.
Without even thinking about it, I was like, I'm an author. And I feel like that's definitely more what I enjoy doing. It's more where I feel my mind is at. It's more what I feel is the prestige level, because it's all you. You know, when you're an author, you're the one who wrote that book. It's your ideas. Mm. You're coming up with the cool stuff. Your voice is what's connecting to the audience. Versus if it's video games or a movie, you have directors in there, you have the animators, you have all these different things that are interpreting the story into different ways, translating the stories into different ways that might totally change how the actual end result plays out. You know, even if it still feels like your vision, there's all these different levels of things that can be connecting with the audience. Versus if it's a book, it's like you wrote those words and those characters, and that's what's connecting and changing people's lives.
Yeah. So, I mean, is there any other mediums that you're looking to break into? So you've done games. I think you're doing a film thing as well. Are you able to talk about that anymore, or is that all hush, hush?
The one thing, we adapted the Sean Platt screenplay. Sean and I did.
Threshold, right? Or is it the other one?
It was Crash.
Edward
turned into Wrecked, and they're going to retitle probably before we shoot it. So that one, they have some actors. They have the cool guy. They have this lady who's on Expanse right now. She's on Expanse season 2 anyway. Yeah, and they have a director that I think is attached. He was this Pixar guy for a little while, a few years, or maybe a lot of years. I forget. But so they're getting people on it, which is exciting, right?
That's cool.
You never know what'll happen in Hollywood. And it's an indie studio, so I don't know if you will call it even Hollywood, but you never know what'll happen in movie land. But fingers crossed, it sounds like it's going to happen. So that's really cool. Yeah. And then there's another project that we adapted. P.T. Hilton and I adapted John L. Monk's novel Kick, which is an awesome story about jumping bodies and whatnot. And and that one, a lot of companies were interested in. And then we did a shopping agreement with this production company. And so that could go well. We've also been approached by somebody who would like to, he says he has all these connections with Amazon. You know how Amazon does their original content?
Yeah, yeah.
So studios, yeah. Claims that they would love to make that into a TV series. But we have the shopping agreement with these other companies, so we can't really go that route anyway. But if we, if the shopping agreement ended and we wanted to part our ways, we could maybe talk to that guy. So there's cool things happening, but you never know when they actually, or if they will ever happen.
Yeah, yeah. And so is there any other mediums like comic books or anything that you, maybe you want to work for Marvel sometime, or is that just not on your radar?
P.T. Hilton and I applied for the DC Writers Workshop.
I know a guy who does it, who did it actually, Ryan Lindsay.
Nice.
Yeah, it's cool. So it's something you're looking into.
Yeah, so we would love to win that or be part of that, you know, get accepted to that program and play in that realm. For me, and also there's actually somebody we've been talking with about turning some of our books into graphic novels, especially like this Justice is Calling and those ones. So that'd be really cool. It'd be like less of our work. It'd be more like somebody producing them and getting all the money for us, which would be nice.
Yeah.
So I like that aspect of it, or like the work for hire where you like write the comics, like they pay you lots of money or some of money. I don't know. It depends. Some people say you get paid pretty well. Some people say it's horrible.
Did you see?
So it probably just depends on what level you are in that world, like if you're super sought after or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love comics. I love this whole aspect. And what I'm working on now is Marvel stuff. So it's very much connected. You know, I'm getting to know all the characters and their backstories. And there's some really cool backstories, you know, in these comics. Like some people, just like they do with video games, they'll like blow off comics.
Hello? I think we might have lost him again. Hello? You still hear me, Dan, yeah?
Yeah, I can hear you. Hear you.
Okay, cool. Let's
So it's annoying when you're talking and it goes, isn't it? Because then it's like, how long have I been talking for to no one?
Yeah, yeah. So what were we just talking about?
It'll be the Marvel comic bits.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, Justin.
Hello. Don't know what's going on there.
No, it's all right. So we're still recording, by the way. So you were just saying you get to work with some of the Marvel properties, so you're getting used to the backstory of some of these characters.
Yeah. 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 So I'm getting to work with this Marvel stuff and the backstories of some of these characters and getting to know like what the worlds are all about and all these intricate plot details that go into these stories. And, you know, it's amazing. It's just like the best novel series out there or the best movie series or TV series. Same thing with comics. They have so many different directions and deep storytelling that it's stupid for people to ignore them. And it definitely is something that a lot of writers should aspire to try at some point. The big difference is you got to learn how to write very concisely, right? Mm-hmm. And that's could be a challenge. And that's one reason I want to try it too, is because I like that style of writing, and I always like to expand my horizons a little bit. So when I did the UCLA screenwriting program, I did sitcom writing because I wasn't really a comedy writer. I didn't know anything about sitcom writing. So I figured that way I'd learn the most because it was something I knew the least about. And similar concepts, it's fun to try these things. I would never want to do documentaries or anything like that. I've applied for those kind of jobs in the past, and you start looking at the job description and you're just like, oh my God, kill me. Some people love it, no offense. I'm just saying it's not for me. And I can't really think of anything else out there that I would want to try either, but who knows?
What does an average writing day look like for Justin Sloan? Because obviously, like you say, you went full time for a week and then now you're back into the grip of things. And I know that there are a lot of people out there who feel like they can't find the time to write. And then there are people like you and everyone else that's partnering the big Catherian Gambit universe that are finding these pockets of time to produce a lot of work. What's an average writing day for you?
Yeah, and I would say for those people, go listen to my episode with Steve Campbell on his podcast. What's that called? The Author Biz. And that was like the whole thing is about that, basically, like fine with like low resources and low time and all that. Because at one point that was me. And so even now, yeah, I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old and, you know, a job again and a wife and all this stuff, lots of debt and all these things that hang over your head, you know. It all adds up, and so it's tough. And so for me, it's like I'll get up. I try to get up at like 4 or 4:30 and write until my kid wakes up, my son, because he likes to wake up early. If I'm lucky, he'll sleep till 6:30. Sometimes he'll wake up at 5, and then I get nothing done because that's basically enough time to wake, get some coffee and try to clear my head, and I'll sit down, and then he's up.
Sounds like my kid.
Yeah, but sometimes I get the time in, so I feel like it's still worth waking up because you never know if you'll get it. And when I get it, and I probably get it more times than not, But yeah, so that's part of my writing schedule. And then I'll get on the train to go to work and I'll write for another half hour, 20 minutes, half an hour there. And then at the end of the day, right, like I said, like maybe I'll try to get another half hour to an hour in the evening if I'm awake enough, which is doubtful because we get the kids. We try to put the kids in bed by 7:30, but they don't fall asleep until like 9:30. Right. So at that point, your head's already nodding off and you've been listening to like this peaceful lullaby music in the dark. And it's so hard to wake up after that. Right. But I try to force myself to. And then I'll try to write for like half an hour, an hour, just do like a sprint, right? Just jump in there and do whatever I can as fast as I can. And then I'll, like I said, just do some marketing. But that differs wildly from when I was full time, of course, because I would still try to wake up kind of early, but I realized if I wake up too early, then later in the day I was dead, right? I couldn't write as well because I'd just be falling asleep. So I'd wake up more like at 5:30 or 6, and if I could get writing in, I would. If not, no big deal. And then I would go write at one cafe for 2 hours, take like a half hour break, write another cafe for 2 hours, like go work out, grab lunch, maybe do something else for like half an hour to an hour that would just relax, you know? Cause at first I tried to work throughout the day and I would just for 2 or 3 hours, just be fighting myself to fall asleep or not fall asleep. And so that was a waste of time. So I realized you need like a good hour or two break in there that you're just not going to write and you need to acknowledge that you're not going to write. And then I try to hop back on again for another hour or so before I went and pick up the kids at daycare. And that was an awesome schedule, But like I said, it's tiring, you know. And then if you're doing that and you're not writing and getting words on the page, you just feel guilty because you know that your whole paycheck now is relying on that.
Yeah.
So it's tough. But I think you got to realize that it's okay to write for 5 or 6 hours a day, and be good with that.
How many words does that average out as a day?
Well, so I probably write anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 words an hour, I guess. If I'm doing it as I do now, like maybe I'll get 2 hours in a day if I'm lucky. So that could be as much as 4,000 words. It's usually less because those stop and start things like that, it's hard to get as many words out because you take a few minutes to try to think about things and whatnot. But when I was doing it full time like that, I think it'd be like 7,000 or 8,000 words usually.
Wow. In a day. Yeah, it's a nice working day then.
Yeah, it's great. And if you do the math on that, like if you're doing 8,000 words a day, even just 20 days a month, and then maybe getting an extra couple here and there on the weekends, that's pretty awesome, you know. Like you're gonna get some good books. You're gonna get at least 2 books done a month if you're doing them like 60,000 words.
Yeah Wow. We're steaming through, so I've only got one more question really before the quick fire round. I don't know about you, Dan, but so what podcasts are you listening to, what blogs are you frequenting, and how are you learning more about the business, as it were?
Lately I haven't been doing that as much. It's more like the groups, you know, like I'll be part of Michael Anderley's crew. So we have a Slack group where we chat about stuff, but then there's like the Facebook group, the 20 books to 50K, which is amazing. And you find some great people in there. And then some people split off and do little side groups in there. So that's awesome. But mostly it's like, just, I have all these author friends now, because once you start doing it, you start connecting with people after a while, you just get lots of great author mentors, I guess you can call them, and just ping them and be like, hey, what's going on here? But when I was trying to get more into it, like in script notes. Yeah. That's like the best screenwriting. Yeah. With John August and Craig Mazin, the author biz, you know, like I mentioned, is cool. The, what's the Lindsay Baroker one, the science fiction fantasy marketing podcast.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Of course the self-publishing formula podcast is pretty good. The Mark Dawson. And, I used to listen to SPP quite a lot, self-publishing podcast. I don't think I have in quite a while, though. I don't know why. I like those guys. I think because they talk a lot and like have fun a lot, which is cool if that's what you're looking for. So like when I was on my commute and just trying to like pass the time, that's awesome. But now if I'm just trying to learn something real fast, I don't really want all the banter in between.
Yeah.
So great for people if you want some fun and feel like you're hanging out with some cool guys.
Yeah.
But if I'm just trying to listen for like 5 minutes to get some information, like Rocking Self-Publishing Podcasts was great.
Is Simon still
your guys' show is obviously awesome.
Is Simon still doing Rocking Self-Publishing? Because I've not listened to
him. I don't know. Did he stop?
I don't know. I think he had a couple of weeks break, and then I just sort of forgot to download or update the feed.
I was just trying to click on it right now just to see, and for some reason it just started playing instead of letting me see. You guys heard the intro to his podcast just now. That's what it is. I hope it's not copyrighted and you guys are in trouble.
Dan, have you got any more questions before we go into the quick fire round?
As always, 1,000, but I think I'll probably save it for another show if you ever want to come back on, Justin.
Cool. Always happy to. You know, I'm gonna, the next year or two, I'm going to accomplish a lot of stuff.
2 years time to schedule it in. So. Cool.
Yeah, I'll be at Pixar.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so the quick fire round. We've got 10 questions for you. Feel free to answer, feel free to not to. You've got like 5 seconds to answer each one, so no pressure. Are you ready?
Yes.
Dan, you want to take the first one?
Go for it. What's your biggest hobby outside of writing?
See, this is hard. I don't have a hobby. I do family and I guess like watching movies or playing video games.
Cats or dogs?
My daughter hates dogs with a passion. So if I have to have one, probably be a cat, but I like dogs.
Collab or solo writing?
Collab with a bunch of asterisks thrown after that.
Harry Potter or Frodo Baggins?
Of course, Harry Potter. I'm a nerd of the younger generation. Now, but I love Frodo Baggins also. That's really tough. But I think I know it's supposed to be quickfire, but I think I put Harry Potter at like one of my top favorite IPs with Game of Thrones and a couple other things. And Lord of the Rings is like right below that after the top three or four. So,
What was the last book you read?
I actually just read something. Well, let's throw out there because I can remember it. Risa Walker's Time Bound. That was a lot of fun.
The one person you'd like to meet?
George R. R. Martin.
Your favorite place to write?
I will not say Starbucks because that's where I write a lot, but it's not my favorite. Germany in a bar that's really cool with a big beer. I actually did that. It was quite fun. Like when I was at business trips, we'd go to this bar all the time. It has these big oak beams with like this cool candlelight style lighting. And that was an amazing place to write novels.
Cool. Favorite writer?
Oh, George R. R. Martin, definitely. Or Brandon Sanderson, maybe. Those two guys. Yeah.
Your favorite alcoholic beverage?
Guinness.
So the 10th question was actually, we've already asked you, is would you come back on the show? But you're already scheduled in, so.
I changed my mind.
Cool. So where can we follow you and your work, Justin?
So easily is justinsloanauthor.com, or you can email me, justinsloanauthor@gmail.com. Twitter is more confusing because I put my middle initial in there, so it's @JustinMSloan. Facebook is also Justin Sloan Author, so facebook.com/JustinSloanAuthor. Any of those, happy to chat. I usually try to get back to people. I used to be really good at getting back to people. I still, like I said, try, but it's gotten to the point where finally I'm so overwhelmed that it's hard to remember to sometimes. So feel free to, if I ignore somebody, just ping me again because I probably didn't mean to ignore you.
Yeah, and check out Justin's podcast, the Creative Writing Career Podcast. It's really good. I've listened to it for about 2 years, actually, since we last spoke.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah, it's been going on for something like that, probably. I started, maybe like a year and a half. Yeah, because I think I started in October. Wait, oh my God, is this May already?
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. Yeah, so a little over almost 2 years. Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
A quick thanks to Disaster Piece for the intro and outro music, Acast for hosting the podcast, the listeners for listening, our patrons over at patreon.com, and thanks to Dan, my co-host, for being here. Because without you, I'd be alone. And thank you again to Justin Sloan. Thanks so much, Sloan.
Thank you guys for having
we
me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? And did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.